and everyone else of the administration of City Hall, of the city of Ocala. Most of all, dear God, I ask that you bless all the citizens of Ocala. And we pray this in the precious name of Jesus, our Lord and Savior. Amen.
Angel, whenever you're ready, you want to call the roll?
Sure. Mr. Musley?
Here.
Mr. Hilty?
Here.
Mr. Molliver?
Here.
Ms. Rich?
Here.
Mr. McLeod?
Here. Okay. Move along here to awards and presentations. 2A, Chamber and Economic Partnership, CEP, quarterly update, Mr. Kevin Sheep.
Good afternoon, Council. It's good to be with you again. I'm bringing our quarterly update, matrix update, to you for your review. It is a little bit early, but with July and schedules, I was worried I wouldn't get here till August, so I wanted to go ahead and provide that to you. You do have the performance matrix completed through May. I can tell you that when early in July, when we submit through June for you, you should see that we're about 95% complete on our performance standards for this fiscal year. I'll be happy to take any questions that you have, but I have brought with me today our business creation team to provide you an update on our activities at the power plant and all of our business creation activities. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to them.
Good afternoon. And first of all, thank you very much for allowing us to be here and provide you with an update on the power plant business incubator and the business creation. My name is Angela Bussler, and I'm the director of the power plant. I started working with the CEP and the power plant business incubator 1 year ago, and I come to you with 36 years of experience in commercial real estate. And I started that when I was 5.
Hi, my name is Ryan Lilly. I'm the director of business creation for the CEP. I come from Virginia. I worked there for a while in business incubation. Was at a manufacturing incubator in Illinois for a few years, and came here to Ocala last year to be at this mixed-use office incubator, the power plant business incubator. My role at the incubator is to provide technical assistance, programming, whatever the residents need to help them grow. In addition to that, I also oversee the Ocala Area Microloan Fund, which I'll be talking about just a little bit later. But for right now, I'd like to hand it back over to Angela to give you an overview of the genesis of the incubator project and where we are today.
Thank you. So the Power Plant Business Incubator, as you know, is a building owned by the city and leased in, was February of 12 to what was then the Chamber of Commerce, now the CEP. We consider ourselves a division of the CEP, and we report to the CEP board, and in turn, the CEP reports to the city of Ocala.
One of the very first things that Angela and I did last year when we came into our positions at the incubator was really to put in place best practices for business incubation. Our incubator is a part of the National Business Incubation Association, which has been tracking incubators and their success since the late 1960s. I'm sure many of you are familiar with the success rates for small businesses, 80% or more of them failing in the first 3 to 5 years. NBIA has published the statistic that companies that undergo an incubation process have an 84.7% chance of succeeding in that same time frame. Currently, we have 8 companies that have graduated from the facility. 100% of those, all 8, have stayed here in Marion County. I think that's very important. Many incubators will struggle with retention of their graduates after they've left the facility. They'll move to the next city or the next state over. I think it's very encouraging that all of our companies have stayed right here and have actually created 80 jobs in the community. Today we have 13 residents and 2 affiliates in the incubators for a total of 15 companies. Residents are provided with a physical office space for 3 years. That's the length of our graduation program. They are undergo an acceptance process where they're evaluated by an acceptance committee and are subject to 2 pages of criteria before they're admitted into the program. Once they're admitted, they set benchmarks. Next week, our benchmarks committee will be meeting with several of the residents to make sure that they're meeting their goals. Our affiliates is one of the new programs that we're promoting. Affiliates are not provided with 24/7 access to the building, but are there 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. If any of you are familiar with co-working, people sharing an office space, this is what our affiliate program is designed to do. So people who may work from home or from coffee shops are able to take advantage of our affiliate program, have access to the conference rooms, the Wi-Fi, and so on. You have there in your packet a list of our 15 companies in the incubator right now. I won't go through all of them. There are 3, though, that I think are worth highlighting. One of them is Appuccino. This is a mobile application development company founded by Gabe Pernuzzi, 17-year-old high school graduate from the area. Second company there is That's How It's Done Productions, founded by a 16-year-old and his mother. And the third company that I'd like to mention is Sunduck, founded by a 20-year-old. I think it's very important that obviously our number one metric at the incubator is job creation. It's also serving the goal of youth retention. You know, these are all young people that are staying in the community and creating businesses, so that's definitely what we want to see more of. Currently, of our 15 companies, we've estimated that they've created about 60 jobs here in the community. All of our companies, there's a misconception that incubators are just a really nice office space and a fast internet connection. It's more about the support structure that we put behind the companies while they're there. So it's that technical assistance, it's that programming, that mentoring that they receive that's really of the most benefit, in addition to the synergy that they have with all the other residents. All of our residents complement and collaborate with one another, and it's just been great these last few months as we've had more residents enter the program to see that pick up even more. So with that, I'd like to turn it back over to Angela. We are approaching a full occupancy of the building. We do have 1 remaining office space, but Angela will tell you a little bit more about the expansion plans that we have going into the fall.
Okay, so we are at 95% occupancy of the original power plant building, and with a grant, a USDA grant that was applied for and received by the city of Ocala, we are expanding into the adjacent pump house, a portion of that, and then also into the former credit union. The approximate $200,000 grant is being spent on not only renovations, but also reinstalling or redoing the air conditioning system. So we're replacing 15 to 23-year-old air conditioners in the 3 buildings. That project is due for occupancy sometime in September, and we already have 2 of our occupants that will move out of the existing building into the former credit union. So we're starting to fill up that space before it's even available.
In terms of marketing and outreach, also in your packet there you have a list of marketing activities that we've been undergoing the last few months. Traditionally, incubators have sort of been closed in unto themselves, and all the activity has taken place in 4 walls. We really want the power plant to be a hub for entrepreneurial activity in the region. Anything that we can do to support entrepreneurship in Marion County, we want to take place there at the incubator. So you'll see there are a number of groups that we've been reaching out to in the community, and also some planned activities that we have going on. Just yesterday, we had a new mobile application, which is appropriate because our incubator does have so many mobile app development companies within it. The incubator just yesterday launched its own mobile application available for iPhone and iPad devices. You can go to the App Store and search for Power Plant Business Incubator. Once you've downloaded the app, you can see videos of each of the residents, graduates. You can see podcasts, listen to podcasts, and see a number of other resources there for entrepreneurs. I tell people really the best way to understand business incubation, to understand the power plant or any other incubators, to take a tour. So we definitely want to encourage anyone that's interested in the community to come out, come through the building, meet some of the companies, and really see the activity that's going on there. The final thing that I'll mention, and it's the very last page of your packet, is the Ocala Area Microloan Fund. This was launched by the CEP last year. This is an SBA, Small Business Administration, loan product. Provides up to $50,000 working capital, inventory, equipment, supplies for either a startup business or an existing one. Doesn't have to be associated with the incubator, doesn't have to be a part of the CEP, it can be any business in Marion County. So we definitely want to, again, encourage citizens to take advantage of that program and make full use of it. So with that, I think we'll take any questions.
Council, any questions?
Wow. I'm just happy to see the success since I was there around when during the inception of this thing here, so to see what it's grown to.
Well, we appreciate the council's ongoing support. We have a great relationship with city staff in particular. Obviously, that's a city-owned building. Angela was talking about replacing air conditioning units. One of those units is out today, so it's a little warm in the power plant, but we look forward to being able to move forward on that project and continuing to partner as we look for ways that are innovative and growing opportunities in our community. And again, always feel free to come by. T-shirt. I'm sorry?
I said I would encourage everybody to go buy their t-shirt.
That's right. Go see our folks at Ocala Tix and get their t-shirt. Yeah.
Thank you all. Just Kevin, hang on one second. I want council to know Kevin and the CEP were tremendous partners with us last Thursday during our All Hands Conference. He gave was it 4 presentations on Thursday to our staff, training them, educating them about economic development, why it's important, why we put our money where it's being put. It was tremendous, and it was a great partnership, and just public want to say thank you for that.
Appreciate it. It was our pleasure. Thank you all.
Thank you, Kevin. Okay. 2B, the folks from Poinciana Heights have asked us to move that to 5 o'clock so everyone could get here. So with that being done, we're probably going to go ahead and move on to public comments. Are there any public comments today that aren't related to an agenda item? If so, this would be your time to speak. Nope? Okay. Let's move on. 5A. Second and final reading of ordinances. A. Adopt ordinance 2014-35 for a code amendment to revise the definition of hairstyling shop to specify types of related services and to permit with condition such related services as home occupations limited to no more than one client at a time. Case COD 14-0003, OPZ May 12, 2014. Approved in a 4-1 vote, and it was introduced by Councilwoman Jay Musley on June 3rd, 2014.
Yes, Council President McLeod, I move that ordinance number 2014-35 be adopted as provided by the Charter of the City of Ocala, except that adoptions by sections on second reading be waived. Based upon staff recommendation for case number COD 14-0003 and other evidence as presented to City Council.
I'll second it. Okay. I have a question after she reads.
An ordinance of the City of Ocala, Florida concerning zoning, amending section 122-3, provided for definitions by revising the definition of hairstyling shop to specify that related services may include manicure, pedicure, facial, hair removal, or massage. Massage therapy services administered by a state licensed professional, amending subsection 122-1283B to refer to a hairstyling shop rather than the undefined term of beauty shop, providing for severability, providing for the repeal of conflicting ordinances, and providing an effective date.
Ms. Rich, you had a question you'd like to ask?
Yes, people that had these shops before this. I think some of them had maybe 2 chairs in there. Are they going to be grandfathered in with what they have now? They're going to have to redo the whole salon.
Mr. Mondale.
And you know, sometimes people come in and maybe she can shampoo somebody while she's doing the other person's hair to let her run along a little bit, except having to wait, rather than having to wait until she's completely, he or she, whoever it might be, completely done with one person's head.
I think Mr. Mondale has an answer.
Well, Ms. Rich, their current, we're not doing anything in the code to specifically address your question. As you know, home occupations are intended to prevent additional traffic in the neighborhoods. That's why it's a one-chair beauty salon, so you have one client at a time. You don't have multiple clients sitting in the driveway or parking on the street and waiting to get into the home. What this code change does, obviously, is it allows other similar uses. It changed the definition from just a beauty shop to a hair styling shop and allows other uses, like someone who could do a manicure there, a pedicure, a facial, hair remover, or massage therapy. That will still be one person at a time. It'll just be, in addition to doing hair, they could do these other types of uses. Now, we don't typically drive around knocking on people's doors who have these types of uses and asking to come in and monitor what they're doing. We typically, when we have complaints about how someone's performing, we may go out and investigate that complaint. So if we have someone who's not operating properly and finds out that there's five people in their driveway and it's disturbing the neighborhood, we might take action. But that's under the current ordinance now. This ordinance wouldn't change that. Does that answer your question at all? No? Okay. Let's try again.
If there's a manicurist in there and a beautician, there are two different people doing two different things.
No, there would only be one person doing two things. Like, for example, if you have a cosmetology license from the state, you're licensed to do all those other things. You can do manicures, pedicures, hair, facials. You can do all those things, but you're still the same person. You just happen to, one client walks in the door, you do their hair. Next client walks in the door, you do a pedicure. Next client walks in the door, you do a manicure. You don't have five different people in the home doing five different things at one time.
Can't have two people in there doing different things.
My understanding is no, Ty. Am I incorrect? Okay.
It's just one person. Each one comes before the Planning and Zoning Commission and City Council. Over the years, we've never had any issue. Once the uses went in there, we haven't had complaints. It can be revoked. But, yeah, what you would do is if you were a one-chair beauty parlor, you would have appointments. Somebody would come at 9, somebody would come at 11, somebody could come at 1. They just can't come all at the same time. It's just by appointment each time. And it's very low intensity. You have your house, and you would set up, maybe you would convert a portion of your garage to do the, and they have to provide a site plan as part of the public hearing process to show you where the actual location of the chair would be. With a massage therapist, it would be, instead of massage therapy goes to different people's homes, this would allow people to come to the actual home. And again, it's a by appointment only. So we see really no big change or impact. It's just kind of freshening up the definition because the definition was kind of old and outdated.
Why are you changing it if you haven't had complaints?
Well, because we're trying to add other uses. When the code only reads as a one-chair beauty parlor, it doesn't address if somebody does nails or if somebody does massage therapy. So this would open it up to a few more people that would be having the opportunity to have in their home an operation, a one chair or a one table for a massage therapy.
If I'm a licensed cosmetologist currently, and I have a home occupation as a one-chair beauty salon, I'm not currently under the code allowed to do facials, pedicures, manicures, because the code doesn't say you could do that. This will allow that same person who's currently operating, who has a cosmetology license, as an example, to not only just do hair, but now they can also do manicures and pedicures. But it is still the same person, and it's only one client at a time. The code isn't saying you could have a manicurist, a pedicurist, a hair beautician, a facial person, and have five different clients. That code has never allowed that, and this code is not being proposed to allow that. It's still one person at a time.
I thought it might have allowed somebody to do hair and somebody to do nails, but
not as it's drafted. Not as it's drafted.
Mr. Musley, did you have a question?
I think I finally got my question answered. So under the existing code, a two-chair home salon is not permitted.
That is home occupation.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. So we're not really...
Yeah, we've had maybe 10 of these over the last 20 years that have come before City Council. And like I said, none of them, they're not in, like, subdivisions mostly, or in the historic district or Woodfields. I mean, most of the... There's not that many of them.
Okay.
Lake Weir, there's a few.
Ms. Rich?
Nobody complained about anything?
In the past, we haven't had any complaints on the one chair. Because it's so low key, people don't even realize that they're operating. There's no sign, there's no nothing. It's just, if you have a massage therapist now, instead of them coming to your home, you could go to their home.
Arguably, the complaint, I'm not sure it's a complaint, but in part what's driving the code change is just the inquiry, the question. The person saying, well, I could do hair under your code, but I can't do pedicures.
Right.
I can't do manicures. So we're trying to adjust the code to allow those people to do that.
So in the past, the person could only really do hair.
Yeah.
And now a manicurist or a massage therapist could open a one stall or shop or
right.
whatever.
Correct. I mean, at the time that when the code was written years ago, that was all they were doing was a hair, was beauty. So there was a few more things that people are doing now. And before, most massage therapists didn't do home occupations or back in the, possibly, I think it was in the 60s when this was written, most probably.
They're still subject to state oversight.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah, the state goes out on the cosmetology. They go out and review the, the sites. Now, in the massage therapy, they don't because the massage therapist could also go to somebody else's house. So they would treat it as the same. It would just be a licensed massage therapy. Either you could do it in your home or somebody else's home.
Okay. Any further questions?
No, it's just a definition change, really. Yeah. That's all it is.
It's expanded, actually.
And in uses.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's right. And we've had many a request over the past few years because more and more people want to be able to work out of their home and have that ability.
Well, do you have any public comment on this item? Okay. Back to council. Call the roll.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Ms. Rich?
Aye.
Mr. Hilty?
Aye.
Mr. Molliver?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye. Let's see here. General business. I think Mr. Gilligan wanted to have 6A pulled. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Okay. Be back in 2 weeks. So we're going to pull 6A. We're going to move on to 6B. Approved contract with the United States Service Industries Incorporated, USSI, to provide citywide janitorial and window cleaning services for a period of 2 years with 2 1-year renewal options in the amount of $520,000. A presentation by Sandra Wilson.
On November 20th, 2013, the city issued a RFP for a janitorial service provider for all city buildings. The scope of services includes cleaning services, specialized floor maintenance, and window cleaning. The pricing structures within the RFP were for janitorial cleaning services at the current service levels and a more frequent service schedule and window cleaning. The proposals were received on January 3rd, 2014 from the following four firms: ACA Industries, Inc., doing business as American Maintenance of Orlando, Florida, DNA Building Services, Inc. of Longwood, Florida, ISS Facility Services of Gainesville, and United States Services Industries, USSI, Inc. of Lady Lake, Florida. The selection committee reviewed the proposals and scored USSI as the highest ranked firm for both the janitorial cleaning services and window cleaning at an estimated annual expenditure of $260,000 for 2 years at $520,000. Are there any questions?
How many square feet of office do we have approximately?
I'll ask Carolyn Dixon or Chris to come up and give you the specifics as far as how much square footage of buildings we have.
They're not moving.
Chris Dobbs, Fleet and Facilities Director. We have about 820,000 square foot of space. So
and that would all be covered?
About 600,000 approximately cleaned by janitorial service.
That includes the outside windows?
No, that's just the in. Well, yeah, outside windows also with the added window cleaning that we're putting in on this contract.
Okay. Chris, can you talk briefly about this contract used to be a lot larger, and how we have, the last couple of years, scaled this down to what it is now. Can you talk just briefly about what we've done to change it to try to cut costs?
Absolutely. Several years ago, this contract, we had 5-day-a-week cleaning for every facility. We have worked to get this contract down to about 3-day-a-week cleaning with most buildings. City Hall is back to a 5 day a week cleaning, but this contract has reduced what, about $250,000 we've reduced this contract down.
Thank you.
I know you got a question, Mr. Molly.
No,
I'm itching,
but I'm going into the business.
Okay.
I move approval.
We have a motion and a second. Further questions by council for staff? Any public comment on this item? Back to council. Call the roll.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Ms. Rich?
Aye.
Mr. Hilty?
Aye.
Mr. Molliver?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye. C. Approve appointment of up to 4 members to the Enterprise Zone Development Agency, one of which must be a Municipal Code Board representative. Presentation by Mr. Mundell.
Right. So we have a few vacancies or openings. There's 2 categories. The first one I'd like to discuss with you is the general opening. We have received 6 applications. Of those 6 names, we need you to select up to 3. And then in the second category, in the Municipal Code Enforcement Board category, we've had a lot of difficulty getting a code board member to agree to serve. So what we'd like to alternatively do, with your permission, is have Chip Rich, our code official, appointed or his assign. Whichever order you'd like to take those in.
Prefer Mr. Rich to assign somebody if he doesn't want to do it.
Chip is happy to do it, but there may be times where he's not able to, and so he would probably assign one of his other staff members to attend.
Okay.
And then we still need to deal with the 6. If you're okay with Chip, then we would still need to deal with the other 6 candidates for the other 3.
So we vote for 3 of the other 6?
Yes.
3 of the other 6, and do we have a little check mark by Chip's name up there?
No, we're just adding Chip right now.
Okay.
We were hoping to have a board member, but we added Chip tonight.
Okay.
Sure, we don't have any hanging chats, please.
Okay. We have a tie.
We have a tie?
Yes. We're going to do it again. But in addition to Mr. Charles Chip Rich as the Code Enforcement Board appointee, Council appoints Travis Megamall. I apologize.
Megamall.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then we have a tie, Mr. Luis Cherubin and Trellis N. Williams. So if you could vote those 2. Make sure you take the one with your name.
Okay? Well, which 2 other members were elected then? I guess I'm confused.
Right now there's a tie between Mr. Luis Cherubin and Trellis Williams.
Well, why would we have to vote?
Why would we have to vote again? If
wouldn't you use 1 as the second and 1 as the third?
Yeah.
You're right. I apologize.
Maybe a wet blanket here, but the code requires that the that one of the members shall be a member of the municipal code enforcement board. Yes. I think Chip would do a great job, but he's not a member of the board.
The challenge, Pat, that we've had is we've been trying since November.
I can amend the ordinance to allow Chip to do it, but the current ordinance.
I think the current ordinance was based on the statute, and we can go back and take a look at that, but. That was the challenge that we had.
I have no problem with Chip. I think I'm going to need to amend the ordinance to be consistent with.
Can you amend the ordinance?
Yeah, I will.
Okay.
Make his election provisional upon amending the code, if you don't mind, so I can fix that.
So are we going to need a motion to make this?
So we'll need a motion to appoint him.
Provisionally.
Provisionally until.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Mr. Rich, provisionally. Any public comment on that? Back to council. Call the roll.
Mr. Molliver?
Aye.
Mr. Hilty?
Aye.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Ms. Rich?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye.
Okay. And so the other three members, you were right, Luis Cherubin, Travis McAmall, and Trellis Williams.
Okay. Do we need a motion for that, or are we good? Okay. We can move on?
Yes.
All right, moving on to consent agenda. Consent agenda items are considered to be routine and will be enacted by one roll call vote. There will be no separate discussion of these items unless members of the council or the public request specific items to be removed for separate discussion and action. Mr. Hilty, do you have anything you would like to pull today?
I do not.
Mr. Molliver?
Yeah, I'd like to pull L just to ask a couple of questions.
Okay, let me see here. We're going to pull L. I don't have anything. Mr. Musley, do you have anything?
No.
And Ms. Rich, do you have anything you'd like to discuss?
Not really, but on A, there's not an amount on there. Should it be or should it not be an amount?
Well, we'll just pull it and ask the question, I'm sure. We got to pull one anyway. Might as well pull two. Right?
Okay.
We're going to pull A and L. Do I have a motion for the rest of the consent agenda?
So moved.
So moved. In a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. Any comments on the consent agenda? Back to council. Call the roll.
Mr. Hilty?
Aye.
Mr. Molliver?
Aye.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Ms. Rich?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye. A. Adopt Budget Resolution 2014-152, amending the fiscal year 2013-2014 budget to accept and appropriate additional funds from the State of Florida Department of Transportation for the Inland Freight Logistics Center Feasibility Study, FM 43537-1-14-01. Mr. Mondell, is there an amount?
Yes, I apologize. The amount is $35,000 for a total project cost of $285,000.
Yeah, we discussed that before about that.
Yes, and there's a companion item, item H, which does have it in the heading of the agenda memo. We accidentally missed putting the $35,000 in A for some reason.
And Mark, this is grant funding from FDOT.
That's additional grant funding from FDOT, yes, the $35,000.
Did we have to match that?
Yes, we had our own money in the project of about, I think it's $150,000. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I remember that also. Mm-hmm. Any more questions, Ms. Rich? You good? Do we have a motion for this one?
No move.
Second. Motion and a second. Any public comment? Back to council. Call the roll.
Mr. Hilty?
Aye.
Mr. Molliver?
Aye.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Ms. Rich?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye. L, approved city attorney's invoice for $63,076.29 for the month of May 2014. Presentation by Mr. Gilligan. I guess the appropriate thing to do would be for Mr. Molliver to ask whatever questions you want to ask.
Yeah, I was just curious. Did this include our total lawyer's fees for the month of May for the union and stuff like that? Plus,
Mr. No, this is only Pat's shop.
And I tried to talk last time about a month ago that we could try to cut this down by 5% each month. We went up.
And nothing against Mr. Gilligan, but we've got to learn somewhere to have a little savings here.
Councilman Baller, if you'll look under item 15, D3, wait a second, 15, 3, I'm sorry, it would be the last one, very last one on that page there, on the last page there. It says labor attorney invoices for the month of April 2014. His invoices for the month are $5,189.
So let's add it to what we...
You'd have to add them together, the total. Mm-hmm. That's right.
So that would make $68,000.
For attorney fees, that's correct.
Well, we need to put some kind of plan into action to save us 5 or 10% a month at least, to start with it or more. And combine, you were going to combine your groups together and see if you could just make one phone call. And
we've done it a little bit. We'll certainly try to amp our efforts up to do that and try to reduce the number of phone calls, do it with maybe a one-person visit. It's a two-edged sword. On one hand, you know, legal issues can be acute issues, and you don't want to wait. On the other hand, there are probably times when staff doesn't need to pick the phone up. They can call me, and I can take it with me, and I meet with Pat in our regular meetings. So it's a two-edged sword. You just got to learn where that balance is at.
Has a thought ever popped up, and nothing against you again, Pat, either, but having an in-house attorney to do some of these things here and then consulting with their firm, a staff attorney? Is that... I'm not sure what that would say or something, but it would seem like that if your staff is driving questions to Pat and Jimmy, if they had somebody here on site that, we're spending $60,000, $70,000 a month or whatever. Has that ever been entertained?
Budgetarily, we ran numbers in the past. Understand the city attorney is a charter position. That would be a decision of the city council. It's actually not a staff decision to make.
There has been, I've never seen them, I've been told there have been 3 studies done, comparative studies in the past. I don't, the latest one, I think, when Mr. Nugent was the city manager, so that's 5, 6 years old, where they've compared and tried to advise council on the comparative cost. I've never seen any one of the studies. I've just told what they're saying, and I know the results of the previous council. They haven't done anything after they've seen them. So, but they're public records, and I'm sure the clerk can make them up for you. And might give you some insight.
Okay.
I've seen them, and it shows that we're doing it the best way.
We're doing it the best way. Okay.
Yeah.
You
pay for what you get, or you get what you pay for.
Oh yeah, I realize that.
You know, and if we had a staff attorney, we would not get the services that we get from Pat's firm. Mm-hmm. We've done it all 3 times I've been here.
Right.
So.
And, you know, I'd like to add to that, Ms. Rich, too, that, you know, you see the price, but what you don't see is the amount of money that having a good attorney saves us. And we've seen example after example of that over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Of how their good work has saved the city a lot of money.
Yeah.
And kept us out of some pretty sticky situations.
Oh yeah, I agree. I just didn't know whether someone could be subbed. I mean, could you find enough where a staff attorney could be busy at less of a billable hour than what they're charging? And I don't know, I'm just wondering about that. That if you had somebody on staff that could do, you know, like you have a PA in the doctor's office or something like that or whatever, is that a possibility at all?
Yeah.
To do, I mean, some of the grunt work, obviously the expertise that they give us is huge. I agree with that.
The city has always experimented in the past with ways to save fees. Mm-hmm. Historically, there used to be a city employee that was the city paralegal who was actually a city employee. Mm-hmm. That person worked physically at my office and at the previous city attorney, Mr. Phelan's office. They physically worked at their office. The different city paralegals physically worked at my office. Mm-hmm. The city does that a little differently now at my suggestion because I was having some issues, but that you reimburse me for a city paralegal. Now she's my employee, but she's not a city employee anymore. And the problem I was having is that because they're physically located at my office, they have a tendency to want to be helpful. And yeah. So when they answer the phone and it's not a city matter, mm-hmm. or they run an errand or they lick an envelope and it's not a city matter, yeah. they're technically we're getting paid by the city to do mm-hmm. something that somebody else should have done. That became an issue for me ethically, and I brought it to the city's attention. I said, it'd be better for you to reimburse me. Now, they don't reimburse me 100%. Forget the percentage, man. I know we just dealt with the issue, but it's around 90 or 95%. But that way, I just get reimbursed for her cost. Mm-hmm. And that was a tremendous cost savings.
Right.
A lot of the staff here do deal directly with Linda on things that are fairly routine.
Mm-hmm.
And part and parcel of which you're being reimbursed, but not obviously legal attorney type fees.
Right.
So there's that. You're suggesting it certainly be looked at. I would take a look at the studies. I can just tell you, I know from talking to bigger cities tend to have in-house staff, you know, Tampa, Miami, Orlando, Jacksonville, they tend to have in-house staff. Cities our size tend not to. Gainesville is an exception. They have an in-house staff. Counties tend to have in-house county attorneys, not properly employed attorneys. So there's basically two models, and in most smaller cities our size, Gainesville being a notable exception, does it differ.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, this is the only way I can have a discussion with my fellow councilman about this, too.
There's pros and cons to it, Mr. Hildy. I'm not offended by it. There's pros and cons to it. I mean, if you're interested in that model, I would mm-hmm. suggest.
I'd like to take a look at it. But
I would suggest
of...
that you probably look at Gainesville because
yeah.
it's about our size, mm-hmm. a little bit different. It's a university town,
right?
But they have an electric utility and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. So they're probably. And when I'm told from the studies, that's who they compared us with,
right?
City of Gainesville.
Mm-hmm.
So
let me also, if council desires, I can give you a copy of Wayne Healthy's contract and Pat's. You can see the differences. There are some differences, and that might provoke an idea or two.
Well, I think also too. A couple of things, you know, the work that Tiffany's doing is going to make us a lot more efficient with contracts and things of that nature, and that'll help with some
Listen
of this.
That, yeah.
And, you know, with an in-house attorney, you're talking one person, and you see the amount of volume of things we have to go through.
Mm-hmm.
We don't just have Pat. We've got Pat. We've got Jimmy. George has helped out from his firm from time to time. Whereas an in-house, you got one person, and that's a lot for one person to do. So at the end of the day, they end up subbing out mm-hmm. a great deal of the work that they're not familiar with.
Right.
So
I would agree with that. I think you go to an in-house attorney, you're going to have all that expense. The in-house attorney is obviously going to have a paralegal. So really, you got two people of your own. Then whatever they can't get to, you guys still got to hire a firm like Pat's. So at the end of the day, is your bill reduced any at all? You know, I don't know. I would think probably not.
I have no idea either.
And I think we're getting pretty good legal representation right now. And we've had a number of complicated issues that they've worked mm-hmm. on. I think if you got to the point where we weren't, going forward with any of the
right.
issues, such as, the Trinity Lane issue, mm-hmm. the Sprint building issue, the New York Yankees, we're staffed, rightly so, is constantly communicating with them to, you know, to bridge the gap there to get a deal done or not done. So,
Mr. Oliver?
I didn't bring it up for all that type of discussion. I just brought it up to see if we could start being a little more economically on our funds.
We've also, just so you know, I've asked Pat if one of the challenges we have is if Pat's not located here, see what's going on necessarily. So he's going to meet with us the Friday before each council meeting with my executive team to discuss the issues, make sure everything's ready to go for the council meeting. I think that will help with the process and trying to maybe address a lot of the issues there rather than a single email here or phone call there. So we're trying different things to see if we can't find ways to be responsive yet to save costs.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think the discussion is good.
That is good.
It is good. And
it brought up a lot of good discussion.
But
the bill was exceptionally large this month. I mean, I'm just looking at the general categories, but I suspect in large part Florida Cable was unique that added to it. I think that's what a lot of that is. And then I think also the Trinity Lane issues with Jimmy probably made it a little bit heavier. But I rarely get calls from staff that I think are unwarranted. And I'm not trying to thwart your direction, but I actually encourage staff to call me because I prefer a proactive approach to the practice of law than call me after there's a problem. I prefer them call me before it's a problem or at the beginning of the problem. And it's a lot easier to fix, and it's cheaper in the long run. You can't measure it. And metrically, a lot of times you can't measure it, but that's just my gut feel about it.
Thank you.
Do you have a motion?
So moved.
Okay. I'll second. Motion and a second. Do we have any public comment on this item? Back to council. Call the roll.
Mr. Mosley.
Aye.
Mr. Hilty.
Aye.
Mr. Molliver.
Aye.
Ms. Rich.
Aye.
Mr. McLeod.
Aye. Okay, let's do introduction and first reading of ordinances, and then we'll go back to the Poinciana Heights folks. 9A, introduce ordinance 2014-37 for rezoning of approximately 1.33 acres of property located east and adjacent to 1525 Northeast 22nd Avenue. Case number ZON14-0002, OPZ, May 12, 2014, approved on a 5-0 vote, and this is quasi-judicial. Who's going to introduce?
Rich.
Ms. Rich will introduce.
An ordinance amending the zoning map of the City of Ocala, Florida, changing from MH, Mobile Home Park, to M1, Light Industrial, for certain property located east of and adjacent to 1525 Northeast 22nd Avenue, Ocala, Florida. Case number ZON14-0002, providing for severability, providing for the appeal of conflicting ordinances, and providing for an effective date.
Okay. The folks from Poinciana Heights, are you guys ready? You want me to wait a few more minutes?
No, that's
good. Come on up and let's get... So update from Poinciana Heights Task Force is what this is. It's item 2B under awards and presentations.
Mr. Frank Washington with the Poinciana Heights Task Force is going to give a brief overview. It's their 10-year anniversary. They've been in existence for 10 years. Staff has been working with them over the years on a lot of important and some complicated. One was a big rezoning. But they also want to talk about what they've done in the past 10 years and then looking forward to some of the things, challenges and issues that they may have going forward in the next few years. And as you pass on.
Mr. Washington, could you give your name and address for the record book, please?
Yes. Frank Washington, Jr., 2030 Southwest 7th Street, Ocala, Florida. First of all, let us thank you for the opportunity to be before you. Once more, the first time we came with quite a challenge because we were, as a community, was being inundated with apartments and things that were kind of undesirable at the time, other things that were kind of undesirable at the time. And the council that was here at that time worked with us, and then when we looked this year, this was 10 years down the road that we had been working with council on occasions, but on a monthly basis, we have been working with your city employees and your departments on a monthly basis for the past 10 years. Mrs. Rich, I believe, is one that was here. I know was one here. And Mr. Gwynn, which was a councilman at that time, and now the mayor. And everyone else is new as far as working with us directly. However, I see one sitting up there that we've been knowing each other since we were teenagers, I guess, Brent Molliver. So we know each other well. But I would like to say to you how well everyone has worked with us as a community. Now, have we gotten everything we need? No. We were too far behind when we started. But have we gotten the kind of cooperation that we would like to have? Yes. We can't say how well we have gotten the cooperation. Each month, we have at least one of the departments to come out. And we've probably been through all of the departments. Public Works, we're working with right now in getting bumper strips on Fifth Street. We worked with the city manager, Mr. Matt Brower, who has been to our meetings on several occasions, and we worked with him on a very dangerous situation on Southwest 7th Street, which was 7/10 of a mile long with no stop signs. And we were able to put four-way stops there, and that has been a tremendous, tremendous help. They at least slow roll through. They don't all stop, but they slow roll through. But anyway, we are pleased about those things that have taken place, because it really starts at the top when the policymakers and so forth granted us an R1, back to an R1 zoning, to keep us from getting any more duplexes or apartments in the area in which we so dearly love. We appreciated that, and that has really helped. The first page you have, with us having come back during the years, you can see that the residents at that time, we were looking at such things as drug activities, gang-related activities, rental apartments, duplexes, and houses that are run down and not maintained by the local and absentee owners and landlords, large unsightly rental signs, abandoned houses, overgrown vacant lots and unkept yards, junk vehicles, cars, trucks, etc., 18-wheelers and other large trucks using the residential area for local traffic, parking on streets and in yards, violation of noise ordinance, especially in the evening and late night, enforcement of curfew ordinance for minors. These are some that were added. We are adding, especially for this year, safety, speeding, and obeying the stop signs that we have, as I said, proper lighting to deter criminal activities, additional playgrounds for children, activities and constructive interaction, and others that may not be listed. And the area that we are talking about is Ponciana Heights, which is the boundaries of Fort Martin Luther King on the east. We have Highway 40 on the north, Highway 27, 27th Boulevard on the west, and 8th Place on the south, and then between 200. When we first moved out there, we couldn't imagine that 200 would be what it is now. And that's been a big help. And at the same time, we are growing to the west. All of the construction and building that has taken place during this period of time and over the years, we couldn't imagine that at that time. And one thing that we do want to remind and request of you is that we don't want it to be like when you get an expressway going through a community and it dies. We don't want, because we have all of the building and moving west, to do a skip over. And we want you to continue to work with us, and we remain with the partnership that we have. We have the police department that is there monthly giving us reports, and at the same time, We let them know about various hot spots that need to be looked at and taken care of. We are real interested in our community because most of us in the Pond Sound Heights area grew with that community. A lot of growth took place there since 1966 or 1960s anyway, up until this point in time. When I first moved on the corner where I live, there was nothing to the west of me. We had to work to close down the firing range that was behind us. We were still in the city, in the county at that time. Annexation hadn't taken place. So we had to work to do that. And then when we formed this partnership 10 years ago, we have really had very good cooperation. We can't thank the city manager enough. And as I said, it starts at the top because it will filter down. The people that we have to work with in your departments and so forth, they're very courteous and give us the time that we need. So I would like to thank you, and that's what everyone is here today for that. I know you get that all the time, people coming up thanking you for what you do. So,
can we put you on the agenda each meeting?
We do. I can be agendized anytime. Well, believe me now, we have been here on other occasions, and we will come if we have to, but we haven't had to come because, like I say, with the clientele that you have set up and it filtered down, the courtesy, the working with people, and working through problems. And it keeps down the adversarial kind of thing that we try to keep down. Because when you can work through problems, both sides see the other challenge that may be there. Sometimes there may not be the funds, but we still have to work through things. Sometimes we can get, and sometimes maybe we can't. But the way that it's given to us and the way we are worked with makes a difference. So we want to thank you for that. And it's not really any request except we ask your continued support of working with us through your departments and the people that work for the city and for the people of City of Ocala. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Washington. Council, any comments from Mr. Washington?
Frank, you all have a new neighbor, Mrs. Doss. And she bought 11 apartments. She's fixing them up, and she has a lot of great ideas as far as a playground and lights and all that. I rode around with her Thursday, I think. You know, to see some of the stuff, because if you don't tell us, a lot of it we won't know.
Right.
But she's working diligently along with you all, so I want you to support her.
Right.
And do whatever you can to help her.
Thank you, Ms. Rich, for that, and excuse me for forgetting specifically to mention that, because Mrs. Doss is the first landlord that we had that want to do the right thing. That and is doing the right thing. She's fixing those apartments up, and God knows they were in bad shape. After 10 or 12 years, people forget about apartments. That's why we didn't want any more in our community, because they were forgotten. And it's just run down, either absentee landlords or don't care landlords. But she made the statement, and she is proving it, that she doesn't want to live in anything, and she said she's going to live in one when it gets fixed. She doesn't want to live in anything that she wouldn't have for anyone else. And so we can't thank her enough for what she's doing in the community, and I thank you very much, Ms. Rich, for reminding us of that. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I got a question.
Mr. Mollen, you had a question?
Yeah. I can't remember who was the oldest, you or me.
I believe it's you. By that much.
By that much.
Mr. Brower, I assume we're going to continue working the same way we have with these
Absolutely. In fact, we appreciate the opportunity and welcome the opportunity to meet with them regularly and to troubleshoot issues, be proactive and tackle issues before they become real problems. And so we certainly continue, plan to continue to do that.
Okay, come on back up, Mr. Walker.
Question.
Thank you all for coming. I think Mr. Musley has a comment or question.
Yeah, well, basically, too, picture tells a thousand words. You know, maybe in a future council meeting, if you did a little video presentation of the improvements and maybe some of the things that need to be on the list, you know, to get improved, would be a big help.
Consider done.
Great idea. Okay, very well. Let's move along to Ms. Rich, go ahead.
Show you, I forgot one picture. Put this on the overhead. You can see the top is the before and the bottom is the after. One of the citizens complained about somebody having a garage at their home, and it was always cars on top of cars. So the top is the before, and the bottom is the after, where the city went out and had a heart-to-heart talk with whoever lived there and got them to clean it off.
Would that have been Mr. Chip Rich at Code Enforcement?
I bet Mr. Rich was involved. He smiled.
Well, that's good.
Anyway,
that's
an example of what the city does.
Excellent.
Great.
Wow. Very good. Moving along, Mr. Novak, I'm assuming you have us a utility report.
I do have a couple of things to go over council with. Good evening. Council may remember that back at the beginning of the month on a Sunday, we had a tree come down just outside one of our substations, which took out one of our circuits and damaged another. The result of that was over 1,100 customers were out of service. The crew did respond in under an hour and had 257 customers back within that time frame. 20 minutes later, they brought back another 685 of the customers, so 97% of the customers were restored to service in just over an hour. By hour three, all customers had been restored, even though the work went on for at least a couple of hours more after that. So kudos to our electric crews. They responded beautifully. One of the concerns we have, and we had a discussion with the board at the Florida Municipal Electric Association, has to do with this issue draft rule that the EPA just came out with. Basically, it is targeting climate change through greenhouse gases, mostly CO2. It appears to be mostly targeted toward coal plants. The concern that we have is that there's a slippery slope. Natural gas plants also emit CO2 at about 50% of the rate of a coal plant, and this could very easily move on to those. The program is meant to limit emissions greatly, and the cost of meeting those targets definitely could have an impact on rates for customers, both coal customers and natural gas. So we're going to continue to work with the FMEA. Florida's Department of Environmental Protection is now involved, the other utilities, and the national organization, the American Public Power Association, is also going to be joining with us by end of month. We're going to do a full review on this and make our recommendations for draft, and we will keep council informed as to our progress on this particular one. We do think that it's one of concern at this time anyway, in its present form. Lastly, we just want to do a call out to two of our electrical engineer employees, Neville Bowen and Eric Weaver, who just passed their Florida professional engineer exam. This is an exam you can't take until you've been a practicing engineer for at least 4 years, and it requires months of rigorous study and preparation to pass. So a big congratulations to both of them. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Novak. Any questions for Mr. Novak, Council?
Yeah.
Ms. Rich?
Mr. Novak, when you call in that your electric is out, what kind of list do they put you on? Mine was out, I guess, the Saturday before the Sunday that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
For over 3 hours. And I called like three times, and maybe the last time the guy told me he put me on the list. On the
I will have to look into that. When you call into the, you use the IVR number, the 666 number?
351-6661 or something.
Well, it's 6666, yeah, but it's,
whatever.
That's the number you would report it in, and it immediately reports to the system control unit. So they will dispatch it. It goes on our GIS system and notes it. We have an outage management system that will immediately note they have an outage in that area. I'm not sure about the list unless they felt that it's something they thought had been restored and it wasn't. But the IVR will usually call you back to verify that.
They did call me back and ask me if my lights were still out.
Okay.
But he told me he put me on a list, and they should, I'm sure enough people called that they knew lights were out in a certain area.
Mm-hmm. They may not have realized you were included, but I can check that out for you, and I'll get back to you with an answer.
Okay. Any further questions for Mr. Novak? Okay. Internal auditor's report, Jenny left you something up here, and we have the audit committee meeting after this, so any questions for her? Okay, let's move along. City manager's report.
Thank you, Council President. I have four very quick items. First, I wanted to report out on the all-hands conference held last Thursday. It was a chance for me and my executive team to have some face time with the city's 130 frontline supervisors. We had two half-day sessions that mirrored one another. Supervisors could attend either the morning or the afternoon. We spent the first hour of the all-hands informing the frontline supervisors about a lot of the great things going on in the city, things that we've accomplished, things that we intend to achieve, and things that we're looking forward to achieve in the future. And this is critical because it achieves alignment with one of our core values, is that all employees got to know the business. And so it was important to us to spend that time doing that. After that, the employees had a chance to pick between two of three concurrent sessions. The first concurrent session, which was taught by Fire Chief Brad Clark, was how to create a culture of praise. As leaders, as you know, that's very important to create a culture of praise for the employees, and he spent a bit of time going through that. The second concurrent session was a panel discussion where senior leadership was able to field questions from supervisors about leadership, challenges that they face, possible solutions to personnel issues, just a very vivid and candid exchange of ongoing leadership challenges. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, Kevin Sheely was in attendance and he provided the instruction for the third concurrent session, talking about economic development, what it means to become economically sustainable and the investments that are necessary to achieve that. And then the last hour, I gave kind of a keynote address talking about communication, alignment with our vision, which is of course to make Ocala a great place to live, play, and prosper, and gave them some tools that they can use to enhance our effectiveness as leaders. We find this time to be very valuable as we try to develop our culture, as we try to develop our staff. On Friday, we had a half-day retreat with senior leadership to go over, again, our culture, alignment issues, and I thought that was also very productive. So I simply wanted council to know that that took place last week. The second item I have, and that's related to that, is that this Friday, in your email, inside Ocala email, you will have an update to council strategic plan. Like this. I want to make sure you're aware of that. I want to share with you, if I may, just a couple of the goals. Recall, you have four goals: economic hub, fiscal sustainability, operational excellence, and quality of place. And we've attached a lot of measures to those goals. So you have a way of knowing whether we are achieving your desired outcomes. So I want to share with you some of those measures that we have here. Under economic hub, one is called percent of available electric capacity. This is critical because new businesses won't locate here unless we have adequate capacity to serve them. And right now, we're only using about 66% of our existing capacity, so we have a lot of room to grow. Under that same goal, percent available water treatment capacity, we're only using 38% of our available capacity, so we have tremendous capacity still in the system to allow for new development, new economic development, expansion of existing businesses. Moving on to fiscal sustainability, two quick measures. City general expenditures year to date is at 52%, and this is for ending April. City general revenues percent year to date is at 61%, so revenues are outpacing expenditures, and that is a very strong indicator that we're going to end the year strong. Moving up to operational excellence, and this one is profound. percent commercial permits processed less than one day. 72%. I'm not aware of another community that does 72% of their commercial permits in one day. That is pretty fabulous. Another one is percent electric reliability uptime is 99.97%. We are at one of the top reliable utilities in the state. And of course, lastly, is quality of place. Pick a couple random here. Total garbage diverted for recycling. We are at 22%. Our goal is 23%. That is above the national average, I think, at 17% for redirecting recycled materials. Percent, we're installing customer survey satisfaction questionnaires throughout the city to get immediate and timely feedback from customers as how we're doing in the delivery of services. Very quickly, percent overall utility service customer satisfaction currently is at 89%. Our goal is 90%, so we're a little bit low there. We're hoping to improve that. Percent overall public service customer satisfaction in April was 89%, and again, we're hoping to get 91%. So I just highlight a couple. Again, this will be attached to your Inside Ocala for you to really look through and answer questions. So I'm going to spend some time with you this next month also getting you better familiar with this, because this is a key tool that we utilize in order to drive home your four goals, make sure you're successful at achieving those. Down the home stretch, Crystal River 3. As council knows, I've been briefing you on this for the last year. The terms of the deal generally have not changed. Pat Gilligan and Jimmy Gooding are reviewing that contract. In fact, I met with Fred Bryant today, Pat, and Jimmy had submitted him some new verbiage for the quitclaim deed. Tremendous, great input. And I know Pat's also reviewing it for form and legality. This will be coming back to you on July 1st. I'll be out of town that day, but Fred Bryant will be here, as well as Dan O'Hagan and Pat, to prepare to present that agreement to you. This is a pretty big deal, represents a pretty big piece of our portfolio, and we'll hopefully have that done for July 1st meeting. And finally, I'll be out of the office Thursday attending FMPA meetings down in Orlando. I'll be out of office that day. Okay?
Okay. We have no mayor, but if Chief Graham is available, nice article in the paper today about the sheriff and the chief getting some type of RV, and I thought we'd have a little presentation, and I'm sure we have a place where the money's coming from.
Greg Graham, police chief. Yes, the Rook. I actually saw this piece of equipment at the International Chiefs Conference in Philadelphia this past year. It's actually a pretty impressive piece of equipment. And I brought the brochures back, and I was actually, they're made in St. Augustine through a Caterpillar dealership. And we were going to have one brought over for us to use and try for a couple weeks. But the sheriff approached me a couple weeks ago and asked me if I was interested in partnering with him to get this piece of equipment. And I told him, yes, I was. So that's what went to the county commission today. Now, you understand that we have trust funds that the police department, it's in our budget, it's seized assets, but then there's a different one in our joint city-county drug task force that it's a separate accounting. Half of the fund belongs to OPD, half of it belongs to the sheriff, the sheriff's office, but we use that money to fund equipment and things for our drug task force. When he came to me and said, you know, would you do this? I said, well, sure, as long as we use that fund out there and not OPD's fund, our internal fund. And all that stuff goes to the county commission anyway when we buy equipment for the drug unit, and they're the ones that make the decision on that. So that's the funding that was used for it.
Where does the money for maintenance of it come from? From the same fund?
It can. I don't think there's a whole lot of maintenance to
I
it.
I have no idea.
It's a Bobcat. It's an armored Bobcat. It's actually
oil change
impressive.
Could be expensive, I suppose.
Well, the equipment's $255,000, and outside of, I mean, as often as it'll get used, outside of fuel, there's really very minimal.
Can you
cost.
Insist that our logo is bigger than theirs? Better looking. Our new logo.
We'll make sure that there's a logo on it for us. Yes, sir. Okay. It'll be kept at the sheriff's office, and we'll. Actually, it gives us an opportunity to do more joint training with our SWAT team and their SWAT team. I don't know that it's well known or not, but when their SWAT team is unavailable, ours is their backup. When we are unavailable, they are our backup. If we do have a major event that lasts for a certain amount of time, and we have those times identified, then they would, like if we had a situation in the city, once it got past a certain time, they would come in and take over for us, and then we'd swap them out because we, and we actually work really well together, but this just gives us another opportunity to partner with them also.
Any questions for the chief, or do you have anything else, chief?
So you did tell him you were going to buy that.
I told him that I would be happy to help them us get it. Yes, ma'am. Now the women and men of the OPD are out there protecting you guys as hard as they can. So.
Thank you, chief.
Thank you.
Always good to hear RV news. Let's see. Moving along, city attorney's report, Mr. Gilligan.
Thank you. Mrs. Rich asked us to look into whether or not we could do an ordinance to prevent smoking in the downtown area. We started looking into it in the square, and we started looking into it. Kind of the mayor asked a somewhat similar question to Cat DeGrow about all the public spaces, mainly the parks. So the memo I actually did kind of broaden her original question to deal with both the downtown square and all the parks. But the long and short of it is that the legislature passed some legislation dealing with smoking. It appears on its face to deal with smoking in the indoors, and there's language, what is called preemption language in the statute itself that says only a state legislature is now allowed to legislate in this area. The Attorney General has opined that means even though the state constitutional amendment and the legislation that came from it all deals by title and by actual words, deals with the regulation of smoking indoors. The preemption language they're saying is broader than that, and it means the regulation of smoking anywhere, including outdoors. There's two Attorney General's opinions that have opined that we cannot legislate in that area. Now, that being said, Attorney General's opinions are just that. They're opinions. They're not case law. They're not statutes. They're just opinions, and they carry a little weight because it's from the Attorney General. But I think my opinion is sometimes better than theirs. And in this case, I think the Attorney General is probably wrong. But that's just my personal opinion, and my opinion is just that, an opinion. So you can attempt to pass an ordinance to restrict smoking in public places, parks, the downtown, or wherever you want, and then you just have to see what happens. The traditional route of what happens is the police would cite somebody for smoking in the downtown square or at a park. They'd be given a notice to appear. It'd be a misdemeanor. They'd go over to the criminal courts, and a defense lawyer may challenge the ordinance as being unconstitutional because it's preempted by state legislation, and a judge would rule on it one way or the other. And that's how you find out whether you're right or wrong. So you give me some direction, because there's no clear legal precedent out there about whether you can or can't, other than the Attorney General has opined on two occasions you can't do it.
Can that citation go to carry a fine?
Short answer to your question is yes, but in section 1.9 of the Code of Ordinances, we have a general penalty for all criminal infractions of our ordinances, and that general penalty is basically a misdemeanor penalty, and it calls for up to 60 days in jail and a $500 fine. Mm-hmm. So you could be, and so every ordinance that we make that's a criminal ordinance is a misdemeanor ordinance, and we assign to it, you can assign less, but we assign to it the general penalty under section 1.9 of the Code of Ordinances. Now that's the maximum sentence a judge can give. They're not obligated to give the maximum. I would suspect that somebody probably wouldn't go to jail for smoking in the downtown, especially on a first offense. They'd probably get a fine. But you could go to the scale for it.
All right.
Can he go far? Can he do the ordinance? And we'll see what happens.
Well, what's the council's wishes?
It's a great idea. It just seems to me like you're going to be, it's really not a violation. You're going to be tying up the court system now with something, and unless it's going to be a fine levy that people don't pay attention to, or just pay the fine and go on.
The other thing that Ms. Crowell has done, which I laud her for, is that they're putting up signs in the parks. Mm-hmm. I certainly put them downtown that says, forget the exact verbiage, but it's something like, please don't smoke in our parks, protect our children. They're just hoping people will do the right thing. There's nothing stopping the city, obviously, from putting signs up to say no smoking.
That could be a good next step to maybe, to see if people will pay attention to it.
Sign says no smoking. Yeah. You know, most people are good citizens. If council directs them to put no smoking signs up downtown, I suspect most people would probably.
Can we try that first?
Yeah.
I think that would be the better thing.
Let's try that first, and maybe try that in the parks also.
Because it sounds like it's unenforceable, so why not go to
put them in the parks already?
She's putting a little bit more. She's not putting no smoking. She's putting, please help our children, or don't tell them something.
Here's Mr. Arbery.
Greg Graham, police chief. Although it would be a great thing to put a no smoking sign up, the law of unintended consequences would result in the police department getting a phone call that somebody's down there smoking when there's a sign that says no.
So it would create a nuisance for you guys.
Well, we serve the pleasure, right? But we go down there, there's nothing we can do, and then the citizen that calls is going to be upset about it.
I think we've come to that conclusion, but maybe the sign, people just might do the right thing, as Pat says, it might help.
Well, I suspect the people that are smoking, but primarily in the downtown, they kind of support the chief, and I'm for them. It's people coming out of the bars. A lot of bars and the restaurants don't allow people to smoke, and so then they want to smoke after dinner or whatever. So they walk out of a steak place, whatever. You have to take a personal loan out to eat at, get the name of it, Mark's. But people come out, they go across the square to smoke. Yeah. They like to do that after dinner. So I suspect there's citizens that, good law-abiding citizens that probably are doing that. The chief may have a point about that. Kathy's signs are a little bit different. They don't say no smoking. See, they're more, I just found it. Please help us provide a smoke-free place to play at our playgrounds or something like that. So it's more of an encouragement not to smoke than a don't do it.
And that's probably less likely to going to draw a phone call to the police department, because it doesn't say no smoking. It says, please.
I think if we be better to try something like that first, and if we see it's still a problem, then come back.
Can y'all write them a warning ticket or something?
Yes, ma'am. It is fairly easy for us to do to track the first time we stop somebody for something like that. And first one be a warning, second one be a citation. So, yes, ma'am.
You may want to, I don't know what the organization is downtown, but the Downtown Business Alliance or whatever it is, you may want to talk to them, because those restaurant owners and those bar owners, they may light your phones up if you prevent smoking downtown. I don't know if they will or won't, but I suspect there's smokers that after dinner, that's where they're going, and so they want to smoke, and I personally wish they didn't, but.
Yeah, I mean, that gets into another can of worms. When we could put up signs that will probably cut most of it down.
I don't know if you're a non-smoker like me, and Mr. Rich, you don't appreciate it, you don't want to be around it, but there are people who do, and they may light your phones up, so.
But when we are having events on the square and there's a lot of little kids, people just don't need to be blowing smoke in their face.
Well, for like the concerts and things like that.
We have to do is put up a sign that says
courtesy to the other citizens, please don't smoke in this area. And then you're not violating what the restaurants are doing. You're asking it just as a courtesy.
But what?
Just put a sign up as a courtesy, please don't smoke in the public area or something like that. And then you shouldn't get any pressure from the restaurants.
Yeah, it's the Christmas concerts or things like that with people in the square, lots of people in the square, or it'd be somebody standing next to you smoking or something.
We've got a similar sign. You may have seen it down by the splash pad, trying to instruct people about what they can wear, what they can't wear, all those types of things. It's worded very creatively, where it's trying to appeal to people's more noble motives. Mm-hmm. It seems to work because of the way it's worded. It's not a commandment. It's work together, make it better. It seems to be very effective.
Because that way it might discourage people, you know, just think twice about it. And then you don't get the police department involved and having to write tickets, and you don't get the restaurant owners mad at you because you're trying to keep people from going outside and smoking. There'll be some results.
Well, let's try something like that first. Yeah. I think that's the best way to go, personally.
I think it's a good compromise. You know, hopefully you'll get what you want.
Yeah.
Just a very minor comment. We've had no smoking signs at the train depot for years, including when obviously Greyhound was very active there. And I don't recall ever hearing of anyone complaining about the signs. I'm also not certain that they were effective at all, because I think we still had quite a bit of, I mean, I have to maybe defer to someone else, but I think we got quite a bit of cigarette butts around those signs. But just we have had no smoking signs there, so you're aware of it.
Well, we could also have a, you know, when somebody from code enforcement's walking through, they could politely ask somebody, please don't smoke in the, you know, it's not necessarily a fine at first, but a polite ask never hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we okay with that for the moment?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Let's move along here. Do you have anything else, Mr. Gillen?
No, sir. Thank you.
Informational items. City Council work session Tuesday, June 24, 2014, 11:30. Capital Projects Replacement Renewal Fund Council Chamber. To City Council work session Tuesday, July 8, 2014, 11:30. General Fund and Millage Presentation City Council Chambers. 3. City Council work session Tuesday, July the 22nd, 2014, 11:30 a.m., Utilities Council Chambers. Number 4, City Council work session Tuesday, August 12, 2014, 11:30, Preliminary Budget Presentation Council Chambers. Comments by Mayor, I don't believe we have one today, and comments by council members. Mr. Hilty?
I am good.
Mr. Molliver?
Yeah, is Kathy here today, Quirrell?
I don't think
no,
she is.
No, she's not. She's
Julie?
Julie is here.
Would you come forward just a second? I'm not going to bite. I just want to tell y'all, we had a good session last Thursday, and I think it's worked out really well, and it's working even better every day. There's something on the call system. Did you get those numbers of our on-call of for the city?
And Councilman Malv, you're talking about for Fort King, right?
Yeah, for Fort King.
No, I'm not.
It came up on my phone that we had the largest hits in the state of Florida on Fort King in one a period of people wanting to know about.
Oh, that's neat.
So I just want to congratulate y'all and working with everybody and doing everything.
Well, thank you. It was a team effort by, you know, the Fort King board and staff and everybody. So,
everything seems to be going good, Matt.
Good. Good.
And we have our new staff person is starting on tomorrow.
Right.
So we were out there with her yesterday and introduced her to Maury and some of the other folks out there. So.
And I think they told me we were averaging about 50 people a day going out there so far.
We've also set the council work meeting date. Do you recall what that was?
I believe it's June 25th.
June 25th. That has been set. Now, of course, that was a request of City Council.
We have one here, June 24th.
Matt,
yes,
we just got word back from the Fort King Committee that they may not be prepared for that meeting. It's not on the agenda, but we will need to discuss as far as programming.
So the 25th is going to be delayed, or?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll keep you notified as to when that next date's going to be.
Who notified you?
Maury Dean.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
When was this?
They sent us a couple of emails just maybe 30 minutes ago.
Okay.
So I
can... I'm sorry, I just didn't...
No, that's okay.
You know you can't give up on Maury.
I know it. Thank you, Julian.
Anything else, Ms. Moore?
No, thank you.
Ms. Rich?
No, I don't have anything really, but...
Ms. Rich, you do, actually.
Will, huh?
Yeah.
His name. I just wanted you all to know that we had a celebrity. Because Diane Reichert's, this little write-up and picture in the Quality Cities magazine was in there, so I thought it'd be nice to give her a round of applause or something for being president of the Florida Government Finance Officers Association. She said her term just ended, but it was just in this month's magazine, and I thought that was really nice for us to know we had somebody that was president of an organization that met with the Quality Cities magazine.
Well deserved, I'm sure.
Huh?
Well deserved.
Yeah.
Did you have anything else, Ms. Rich?
Nope.
Mr. Musley.
Yeah, a couple things. I will be on vacation next week, so I won't be attending the workshop on the 24th. So don't try to call me and don't wonder where I'm at. I've been forewarned. The second issue is concerning something that's coming up in the near future. Every 2 years, council appoints several people, one being the city manager, one being the city clerk. I believe the city attorney is, and also the city auditor.
Auditor and chief's nominated.
Yeah, and the chief's nominated by, of course, the mayor. I was wondering, I've had some conversations with our city attorney. If the last time we did it, we did not do a formal written review. And, you know, I don't know about y'all, but every year I get a written review. You know, from my boss, of course, I do the review and give it to him, and then he opines.
Well, that sounds good. Let them write it and give it
you know,
to us.
And over the years, I've actually figured it out, and my reviews have systematically gotten better and better. Unfortunately, the raises haven't followed that way, but at least I got some good fodder for material someday. But I would, if council will give me some direction here, I'll be more than happy to take the lead on it and come up with you know some type of form that we can conduct. You know, of course, it would have to be in a public meeting and public forum to give Mr. Brower some feedback back on his performance, and whether we take that to the other appointed positions or not, it's up to council's prerogative or not. Last time it just kind of hit us all at the last minute.
Right.
And it was a motion to approve, and that was it. So I kind of throwing it out to you guys as to how you want to.
That's an excellent idea. Yeah.
I've got a form. Have you seen the one?
Pat provided me with some of the forms that had been used in the past, as well as some other forms that were used from some of the other cities.
Well, why don't you put something together? And
okay.
I think, you know, now if we're going to do it for one appointment, we need to probably do it for everybody.
Okay.
That's why I'm going to say do it for all five of them.
Yeah, and I think
rather
that's...
Rather than just one.
Okay, you got it.
And put something together, and we'll... is that something we'll fill out based on the
questions? Yeah, I think so, and I think we need to calendar it for sometime in September probably.
Right.
Last time it just kind of like hit us, and it wasn't even calendared until the meeting,
right.
That the contracts were all expiring on. So just trying to be, you know, proactive. And
well, I think that's good. And I mean, you know, the citizens give us our report every 4 years. So,
yeah.
I think it's also good that we do the same.
Okay.
Any questions? Okay. Anything else?
That's all. Thank you.
And I have a few things this evening. First of all, minor, but I do appreciate all those folks that either came to see me or checked on me or emailed me or sent messages. I do appreciate it. I'm semi back in action, and I appreciate all the thoughts and prayers. On to something else. Mr. Poucher, Mr. Novak have been working on a rate study to see what we can do to help out our T&D linemen. I don't think it's any secret that we've lost valuable people to the different electric companies over the last several years. We're kind of at a crisis stage, and I know we're supposed to be having some meetings and get an update from staff where we're going with this, but it's critical. I think it's been a year or so ago that I mentioned it, that it was a concern of mine. We're at a critical stage now. We're to the point that we're losing these people, and we need to do something. We need to do whatever we can to make those employees competitive so we don't lose them to other electric companies. And I don't know what that answer is. I'm sure staff's going to have some options for us, but we need to do something that needs to be as quickly as possible so we don't lose another person to whether it's Sumter Electric or Florida Power or whoever it may be. I mean, it's critical. If we had a hurricane, we'd probably be behind the eight ball at this point. And I don't want to see that happen because it becomes a risk not only to the citizens but the people that are working there. So hopefully we'll get that done in the very, very near future and get it back in front of council and maybe be able to do something. And the other thing, telecom. First of all, I know that Mr. Brower, Mr. Poucher, Mr. Novak, I believe Tiffany and Sandra, most of you and whoever, having a name issue here.
Mel,
right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mel, the new head of telecom. I understand that the things that are going on there, the changes that are being made are very good. I'm very happy to see that. But I'm going to tell you a story about a recent customer, and I'm also going to tell you another issue I have. And during our meetings that next week that are, you know, that tell us what council is, excuse me, what staff has come up with for telecom, somebody can explain this latter thing to me. But first of all, customer called in 3 weeks ago, wanted dark fiber for his new business that he was putting in. He was just exchanging places of business, but you know, he wanted our dark fiber because that's the business he's in. He understands how well it works. He calls in. He had to call back. He had to email back. Finally, he got a few answers. Some of the answers he got were, we'll get back to you in a couple of weeks with some final answers on what it'll cost to hook you up. The sad part about it is, no one ever got back to him. So what he did was, he called Cox Cable, and they come out and they hooked him up. Now he doesn't necessarily want to be part of Cox Cable. He knows our fiber system is far superior, but he had no choice. So we've got a huge problem there, which leads me to my other issue. We have right now telecommunications engineers that get a base salary. I'm not going to give names. Those are Mr. Brower's employees. We have a telecommunication engineer that has a base salary of $80,000, but ranks, excluding Mr. Brower and Chief Graham, this guy's and these people have ranked in the top five in total salary in the entire city. Now, how do you do that? How do you have a base salary and you still rank in the top five? It has something to do with overtime. I look at it, I don't understand it. So in our meetings next week, I want someone to explain to me just how somebody, a telecommunications engineer, can make more than almost every one of his bosses, excluding Mr. Brower. And I think that's a problem. We have several problems in telecommunications, and they keep coming up, and they keep getting bigger and bigger. But the fact that we're not getting back to people when they want to hook up to our dark fiber, and the fact that we've got people that are paid higher than the executive staff of Mr. Brower, that's a huge problem to me. and I expect to see some answers in the very near future and some explanations. And but by the same token, I do want to acknowledge the hard work that, you know, like I said before, Mr. Patcher, Mr. Novak, Mr. Brower, Tiffany, Sandra, and all the others, Mel, what they have done to change that in the short amount of time. But we still want answers to why some of these other things are going on. I think the public deserves a right to know also. With that being said,
if Ms. I can real quick, we're
sure.
meeting with you later this week.
Yes,
you do
I understand.
That update, and
yeah.
we'll have the information for you at that time.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you can get with me about that customer so I can research it and find more out about it, that'd be great.
Okay. Okay. With that being said, does anyone else have anything? We're going to adjourn, and do we want 5 minutes before we start the audit committee?
It's up to you.
You want 5 minutes before we start the audit committee? You want to go right into
Let's
it?
Let's go right into it.
Okay, we can go right into
Wait a
it.
Minute.
I'm sorry. Can we get a few minutes to switch the audio over?
Okay, we'll have 5 minutes to switch the audio over. Does that give you enough time?
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. So this is adjourned.